150 and 500, right?
And here we are, another episode of Common Ground. My name is Steve Nosk, and I have Sherry Sauce in the house. And Sherry, we haven't been on air for 2 weeks. To our guests, we've actually been on break for the spring break. And now, of course, right, with our kids in school, it's going to be an extended break. But it is what it is. We are taping on Monday, March 16th, and this will broadcast on Thursday, March 19th. And I'm saying that because I don't know what topics we're going to discuss today. I don't want people to hear the conversation, right, and say, hey, is this live? You know, no, this is not live. This is tape broadcast. I want our audience to know, and I'm emphasizing this specific broadcast.
That's a good idea.
Because we don't know what's going to come about in this conversation. So we have a great, great group. Two guests here today, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West and Republican Chairman of the State of Texas, Chairman Dickey, are in-house today discussing their campaign to become the chairman. So we're going to give each of you about a minute. Just tell us about yourself and, you know, why you're running. So, Chairman Dickey, why don't you start?
Well, I have been chairman of the Republican Party of Texas for 2.5 years. We have executed on a plan to lay the groundwork for significant victory in 2020. And for whatever reason, the election is just a few months before 2020, and I absolutely want to see this through. I want to continue executing on the plan that will provide for victory from the White House to the courthouse, reelect President Donald Trump, reelect Senator Cornyn, continue our victories in and our majorities in the Texas Senate and the Texas House. In fact, win back some of those seats and make sure that we continue our huge congressional supermajority in Texas and that we grow that as well.
And Lieutenant Colonel, by the way, thank you so much for your service.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Tell us a little about yourself and why you're running for the chairmanship.
Well, I was fortunate to end my military career at Fort Hood, Texas, and got the opportunity to come back here in December 2014. I live down in Garland, Texas, not too far away from here. And when I look at what is happening in the United States of America, we're involved in an ideological civil war, there's no doubt about it, between progressive socialism and constitutional conservatism. And the front line of that ideological civil war is right here in the great state of Texas. It's so important that we have a strong conservative red state here in Texas that can push back against this movement that we see that is overrunning in our major urban population centers. So what is important for me is not just to continue to win the elections, but to defeat a movement that I don't want to see us wake up in any time in the future in the state of Texas and endure what we just saw happen in Virginia.
Yeah, and I think both of you are really on the same platform as far as that's concerned, that we want to keep Texas red. And the first thing that I'll ask as a question to you, Lieutenant Colonel, is, well, Chairman Dickey's been in
Wait, can I jump in for
sure,
a second?
Absolutely.
Remember the text you sent me about the one person asking us to get them to explain it? Didn't you send me that text?
Okay, so let's ask Chairman Dickey then first. One of our audience members, before the show, we promoted the show. They want to know what the chairman actually does. Since you are the sitting chairman, give us just like a 20-second blurb on what the chairmanship is all about.
Sure. Well, actually, the biggest legal liability is running the primary election. And so, in fact, right now I'm having to deal with court questions and questions with the governor's office and others on the runoff for the primary, and especially with the situation we're seeing right now, the very fluid situation with coronavirus that we are having to deal with. So that's the primary legal responsibility. Then, of course, you have to raise funds for the operations of the party. You have to hire staff and manage staff all around you have the legal responsibility of compliance with all the federal election and state state ethics commission filings. And then you have the responsibility for encouraging and supporting the base and advancing the platform and getting elected officials elected and advancing our principles while they're in office. So it's a very complex job with a lot of pieces. And the biggest legal liabilities are actually the parts no one thinks about.
Okay. I hope that gives our audience a little understanding.
I thought it was really good. I didn't know the answer to that.
I'm glad you're happy with that.
I am.
I thought it was a lot deeper, but I think it is a lot deeper once you get past the...
We only have an hour, Nosk.
That's right. I don't want to talk about... So let me go back to Lieutenant Colonel West. So the chairman is the sitting chairman.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously when you have an incumbent and a challenger, mm-hmm. there's a reason why you're challenging the incumbent. So mm-hmm. what you know, got you to run against the chairman? Like, what inspired you?
Well, I think that we can do a lot better, I believe, in getting our message out and about across the great state of Texas. I think that when I looked at the 2018 results, I looked at the 2019 legislative session, we could have done a little bit better there. And I was very concerned with the primary results, the fact that statewide we were outvoted by the Democrats, 68,000. I mean, we need to make sure that we're motivating and inspiring our people to come out and vote. And some people will say, well, it's the primary, it's not as important. I think it's most important in the primary because that's where you're picking your team that you want to go and be in the arena to fight for you come November. So I want to make sure that we're focusing on that. And again, I want us to see this as, how do we stop this movement that is trying to bring itself into the great state of Texas? Because if you look at some of these other states, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Virginia, they have not been successful. And states like Texas and Georgia and Florida and North Carolina are facing it as well.
Well, and the chairman, you obviously feel that you're doing a good job. So, you know, what's your response to Lieutenant Colonel West? You know, he wants to run against you and you're saying, hey, I'm doing a good enough job here. You know, I understand the need for democracy and to be challenged, but, you know, I should have another term because of why.
Well, as a conservative, I have no problem with competition. There are a few things the colonel said that were not true. Turnout in the primary is only a measure of excitement about the top of the ballot. It's not a measure of excitement all the way through. In fact, in the last time that we had a similar situation where the Democrats had a big fight at the top of the ballot and the Republicans did not was 2008. 2008, the Democrats turned out, that was Hillary versus Obama. Democrats turned out 700,000 voters more than they turned out this time, even though the total registered voters in Texas are up by 20%. So clearly on their side, even with a big battle, they had a drop in excitement. So if you're measuring excitement to excitement, that you need to look at a similar race. And in that race, theirs dropped by 700,000, ours increased by 700,000. So if you're measuring, are Republicans more excited? Clearly they are, because without the battle at the top, we still had a 700,000 increase in Republicans. And also, it's not the primary election that is most important because it selects the team. It's the candidate recruiting and training that selects the team. And we did an exemplary job. In fact, we did the biggest job the Republican Party had ever done with that. And because of that, we had over double the number of candidates on our primary ballot that the Democrats had, and while simultaneously having a drop in primary fights. We succeeded in doing what we need to do to keep Texas red, which is we made sure incumbent Democrats were challenged, that we did what we needed to do to expand the party, to grow the party by going into neighborhoods we had not been because we are challenging incumbent Democrats. And all that work doesn't happen in the middle of an election year. It happens a year and a half beforehand, and we did that.
But see, I'll take umbrage to the fact I did not say anything that was not true. I mean, we did have 68,000 more Democrats vote against the Republicans.
But you said that was a reflection of a lack of excitement.
I think it was a reflection of a lack of excitement,
well,
because one of the things
that's
that,
either disingenuous.
Stop. It's not disingenuous.
That is disingenuous.
It's not disingenuous.
Or it shows a lack of awareness of
2008. It was a lack of awareness as well, because I had many people that I brought that out to say, I did not know what the primary is about. I had Donald Trump was unopposed, and so I did not come out. So that's where it comes back to us explaining to people what the importance of this primary is. And again, it is about us getting out there, making sure that we are showing overwhelming strength, that we're showing that we're picking a solid team that's going to go out there. And that's not telling a lie. We were outvoted by 68,000.
So is it your argument that if we had outvoted them, that would predict everything was great?
If we had outvoted them, it would have showed that we had a momentum, we had an enthusiasm, more so than they did. And there is no excuse, sir. There is no excuse, Chairman. There is no excuse for it.
Then you will appreciate that in the 2018 election that you earlier said was terrible, in the 2018 election, we had 50% more
votes. Well, when you lose 12,
primary,
you lose 12 state house seats, you lose two
again,
state senate seats,
you
lose
wait,
two
no, you
U.S.
Wait.
Congressional seats, you lose 56 judgeships.
Well,
that's not success,
say,
sir.
All
that's
right,
not success.
I want to get in here.
You say having less primary
vote. But that's not
vote,
success.
You say having less primary vote means a bad signal. In 2018, we had a lot more primary vote.
If so you had read a political argument last week talked about that. There was an article from Politico that talked about that, how the Democrats felt.
I'm not quoting Democrat talking points.
What I'm saying is, if you believe that it's not important to understand the goals and objectives and what your opposition is saying, then you're putting your head in the sand and you're exposing a very bad part of your anatomy.
And I'm saying you're playing victimhood.
I'm not playing
by
victimhood.
Quoting the Democrat only people, talking points.
No, I'm not quoting Democrat talking points. I'm talking
about. You quoted Politico.
Well, you know, I can't quote a news media outlet that is saying this is what the Texas Democrats want to do. Okay, so I should not talk about the fact that Michael Bloomberg is going to dump $8 million in the state of Texas with every town for gun safety because he wants to flip the Texas State House and he's focusing on Dallas County and Houston County.
You can say he said that, but he also told all of his employees he'd be paying them through November. And he's not.
Well, I don't care about employees. I'm talking about
my point is
them
Bloomberg's
doing exactly that. Mike Bloomberg dumped $2 million in Virginia and did the exact same thing. But now he's saying he's going to dump $8 million in the state of Texas and Dallas County and Houston.
That.
They're doing it. Okay.
He's saying
they're doing it. Okay, what
he's
else?
Not
okay,
following
move on.
So we're going to move
now
on to
that
a different
he's lost
question.
The presidency.
So
he's
the
not
other
following
question. Did you have a question before my
I
show?
I did. Okay. So to your comment about how the job is to rally the people, get them to run. Actually,
that's one piece.
I know, and I saw that. I actually did because this isn't our first show. We've done a lot, and I've had to I've sent so many emails trying to get people to come on the show. So my question is this, for me personally, locally, I voted in the Republican primary and I noticed something this race that it definitely is a bee in my bonnet. I'm not happy about it. There was a gentleman sitting out at my voting location, which happens to be located near our only elderly retirement community in Frisco. And he had a sign that said the Republican Voter's Guide. And then you went and got this guide and it was actually a piece of paper that had a pack. And they didn't have all Republican candidates on there. They had a selected few. And I want to know what you two have to say about that, because you basically are trying to vie for a position that represents the Republican Party. And there were a lot of my Republican friends who spoke out about this because they said the Republican Party does not endorse specific Republican candidates, but that had happened and it had been allowed. And I'd just like to know.
So you're
what
talking
you
about specific PACs?
It was a specific pact on the, I have it here.
No, I understand. But
the gentleman sitting in the voting area that was poll watching had a white and, I have a picture of that too, a white and red sign that said Republican Voter's Guide, because I drove by it. I'm an election day voter.
People can print anything, so.
But what he was marketing and what he actually was handing out.
So what's the question?
My question is it was a selective thing chosen to be done by other Republicans, the ones that you apparently would be rallying to come out and run and vote and get everybody excited. So basically, how do you two feel about that happening within your own party and being represented that way? You don't have a problem with it at all?
Well, from a party perspective, you're not supposed to be there playing around in the primaries.
Absolutely a misrepresentation, in my
opinion. Well, it is a misrepresentation. I think that's something that should be, you know, reported to make sure that there are a lot of PACs and people out there to do, you know, very nefarious things, fundraise and what have you. So I think it's really important that we make sure that those things are reported and we understand and know about it. But once you have selected your team and your slate, I think it's critical that we do have those ballot slates out there that can help people to understand, especially for our judges. Because lots of times people don't know Judge A from Judge B from Judge C, but we really have to educate and inform, because that's one of the critical things that the left does. The left goes out to control the courts, and then they block everything that you try to do, or they tie you up from a judicial perspective and trying to supersede the legislative perspective.
Yeah, and this my opponent and I both agree on, that
that's coming down. That's what the bell's for.
That once we have our nominees, it is the party's job to support all the nominees, and there are a bunch of ways we can and have done that and do that. The challenge with what you saw is, you know, that's the downside of freedom of speech. People can mislead people with their free speech.
No, and
it's
not
a great thing, but there is, aside from us trying to go out with a blanket message, especially during the primaries, those things happen, and And that it was incumbent on the other people who were on the other side of that to overcome that by countering. You know, the answer to abuse of free speech is not less free speech, it's more free speech. And so
I completely agree with that. I was just wondering what y'all's response was, because I don't have a party. I vote very much however. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And since you guys are vying for the spot that's like the head, I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. But especially in a primary, somebody taking sides in that primary, we have to stay out of that.
I think the major concern that a lot of our audience will have is that, you know, Texas is the firewall. Let's just face it.
It is.
If we go blue, it's done. So what would you do? I'll ask Lieutenant Colonel first. What would you do to make sure that this so-called purple wave that's coming in, and the somewhat liberal policies that are being introduced in the state house and other places within the state, how do we confront that as a party? What would you do initially to try and combat that wave?
I think what you have to do is go where you think the other side believes they're strongest and successful, and that's the major population centers. That's their strategy. That's how they have done it in every other state. Go into the major centers and flip them and get control of them. So we have to start going in and challenging them there. One of the things I think is important, when we hear people say they want to turn Texas blue, we need to make them define what does turning Texas blue mean. It's not just this trite slogan that they're throwing out there. And it's really critical also that we get in and we talk to some of these corporate and business leaders that have moved here recently from California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey. Think about Toyota North America that has just moved in right down the road in Plano. And of course, all of the effects you see of the employees that are moving into areas like Prosper, McKinney, and what have you. So we need to be able to challenge them and put them on the defense of what they believe, but talk to these business leaders, say, hey, look, if you're not talking to your employees, I'd like to have the opportunity to talk to your employees and let them understand why the policies and principles and the growth of opportunity and prosperity that you see here in Texas is unlike the place that you left.
And Chairman?
So actually, we have done a great job fighting against that onslaught. In fact, and in spite of really focused attention, just like in 2019, they were focused on flipping Virginia. In 2018, they were focused on Texas. They didn't have a presidential race to worry about. It was President Trump's midterm. They really aggressively came after Texas. I mean, O'Rourke had $40 million more than Cruz, and yet we were still able to make sure O'Rourke didn't win. Now, he had too much carryover benefit because we still had straight ticket voting, and so all of the work he did and all the staff he had in those urban and suburban areas had more effect than we would have liked. But that's in spite of the congressional level and above. There was another $150 million of Democrat money that came from outside Texas to try to flip Texas. And so for us to have withstood that onslaught of an overwhelming amount of money and minimize the hit that we took from that, and then turn around and come up with a plan for how to deal with that, that's why we have been doing, you know, I'm glad that my opponent agrees that we should be working in urban suburban areas, because that's what we've been doing for the last couple of years. That's where we started our voter registration efforts. We've already registered 70,000 more Republican voters. We have a lot of evidence that once those are registered, that they turn out at 86% at the next general election. So that is 50-something thousand extra Republican voters in urban suburban areas. So we already know we're going to have. We have taken what we learned from what O'Rourke did, the number of staff he had, the number of volunteers he had, where he had them. We've already learned from that, and that's why we're executing a plan where we're going to have 280 paid staff by June, way earlier than ever before an election. For comparison's sake, Governor Abbott had the biggest staff by a mile. At the peak, at the very end, had half that much staff that we're going to have out this June. That staff, we're also leveraging volunteers at a level the party hasn't leveraged volunteers in decades. All those are things we have learned. We are using all the enemy's tools and experience against them, and it is working. And we've actually seen that it's working as we are winning in urban and suburban races, and we have been for the last few months.
Do you have any comments to what the chairman said?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I was just down in DeSoto, Texas, which is South Dallas on the other side of Trinity River. And I was speaking there with the Southwest Dallas County Republican Club, led by a great young man just came in there, Troy Jackson. And Troy was a little frustrated because he had not been getting a lot of support from the Dallas County Republican chairman and a little bit of support from the Republican Party. But what was great was that there were probably about 125 people that were there, a little small Mexican restaurant. 25-30% were black conservatives. And I think that what we have to do is to really start fertilizing the ground there. And this is something that may take a couple of years, a generation, because where we see ourselves in America, especially in the inner cities, I grew up in the inner city of Atlanta, Georgia. This is something that's been going on for the last 50, 60 years. So we have to go back in and stay there. One of the great things that the current RNC chairman, Rona McDaniel, did was she opened up offices in Flint, in Detroit, in minority neighborhoods. And when you show that flag, you know, literally, you're there, then you start to make those inroads in the community. So it's not just about, you know, running candidates down there. It's about fertilizing the ground so that you can have success, not just in the now, but projecting all into the future.
Yeah, I heard Candace Owens speak at the Denton County Republican meeting conference.
I was there.
That was really good. And I think that's really good that she's out there saying, hey, you know what? The blacks have benefited from the Republican Party. There's no reason why we shouldn't be more exactly. active. And I think the party needs to reach out to all minorities and all people. And that brings
well,
me to my next question.
And we are, actually. And in fact, I love the fact that in Dallas alone, we had three black congressional candidates. We've actually got a black congressional nominee in Dallas. We have a black congressional nominee down in Houston as well. And those, that kind of representation does matter, and working the neighborhoods does matter. And we have been doing that. That's why it's important that we supported those candidates and encouraged them and recruited them. And we saw, in fact, the most diverse base of candidates this go around that we've had at the Republican Party. And that's because of the work we did a year and a half ago. It's not just during the election. It is much longer time period. And it's a come and stay, not come and leave. And all of the work we've been doing has been focused on being sustainable and staying in the neighborhoods. And that's what we've been doing.
And that was one of the reasons why back when I was in Congress in 2011, you know, I started this thing called the Guardian Fund. Because when I came back from Afghanistan and I ran for office, it didn't get a lot of support from the Republican Party. And, you know, you've been in Afghanistan, you know, and you're showing up. No, you're not going to be able to fund your own campaign. But what we wanted to do was focus on those minority and military conservatives. And we have been very successful with that. And that's the type of plan that I'd like to bring in. And you talk about Wendell Champion and also Wesley Hunt, who are two black former military officers, Army officers, West Point graduates. And those were guys that are the result of the Guardian Fund and that program that we put out there to say that we're active, we're here, we're recruiting, we want to get you engaged and get you involved. And we want to put those guys in those districts, those areas that we really have not had, you know, that much attention paid to previously. I think that Mr. Champion has a great opportunity to go up against Sheila
don't
Jackson
leave Trey
Lee.
Penny out. He's
oh, I know. Well,
fantastic.
I know Trey Penny personally, but I'm talking about military guys. You know, first and foremost, but Trey Penny, a doctor, former you know Dallas police officer. I've worked with him on several things up here with the Dallas PD, and but that's what we want to do. We want to find those young men and young women that can be the role models and examples, especially in these inner city communities.
Well, as the challenger, is there anything that you would do differently than presently the Texas?
Well, I think the most important thing is to continue to build upon and make sure that you have a solid presence. One of the things I talk to a lot of Republican clubs is we've got to, I don't like the word outreach. Outreach, you know, basically means you show up in whatever respective, you know, Black History Month, Hispanic Month, and then you know, come back 2 months before the election. What I want us to have is policy inclusiveness, consistent engagement in these communities. Why aren't we looking at those after-school reading programs? Why aren't we looking at all of these things that are so necessary? You know, why aren't we looking at, you know, the Big Brothers type of program for a lot of these young men that don't have, you know, fathers and role models in their family? So that's what I want to start seeing us doing.
And policy inclusiveness, we've actually been on the forefront of criminal justice reform, which has been the big thing that President Trump has been able to make the biggest headlines with, the biggest inroads with, and it's something the Republican Party Texas has been working on for a couple of years now. And ever since I've been elected, we have been working to advance criminal justice reform. I mean, I testified for the latest iteration of the Sandra Bland Act, and that is those kind of steps, which are both conservative and important to the black community. Those are initiatives that we have been doing and have been doing for a while.
And that's why I want to inspire the legislators here in the state of Texas to get school choice, something passed. When you saw the president give an opportunity scholarship to that young 9-year-old girl brought up in the inner city of Philadelphia, no father, single black mother.
Right.
That's the type of thing that we have to start doing, because an education is the key to equality of opportunity. Then another thing I think we can really work hard on, which has decimated the black community, is the murdering of unborn babies. When you think about the fact that Margaret Sanger, an avowed white supremacist and a racist, who founded Planned Parenthood, yet 71% of those clinics are located in the inner city communities, that's an issue that we should be fervently running on and communicating and talking with our brothers and sisters in these inner city communities about.
But well, we absolutely have been.
But do we have stats on how the minority community is served via the other things Planned Parenthood does, you know, like birth control, all of that? Because I do think those sorts of things are also crippling the minority community.
But being in Congress, I will tell you that you also have public health clinics that are funded by the government to be in these communities. But there is no doubt in anyone's mind what is the number one purpose of Planned Parenthood. The number one purpose of Planned Parenthood is not the routine and regular women's health.
No, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, if I think about the minority community, I would think that some of the other things offered also have a massive impact, was all I was asking, if maybe you had numbers on that. Like, for example, is it non-existent, is what I was wondering. If it's non-existent, then that makes your argument even stronger, which is kind of why.
Well, I would question, why would you have 71% of your clinics in specific neighborhoods if, you know.
No, oh, I get it.
And when you look at the numbers since 1973.
It is convenient. I'm not arguing.
Roe versus Wade, 20 million black babies murdered.
I'm glad you brought up education, because that was something I wanted to ask you guys about. Because I am one of those purple voters, I guess. And I want to, and me personally, and a lot of people that I talk to, the state of education in Texas is something that compels a lot of my voting and a lot of my friends voting. So I'm curious what you had mentioned, choice, and I get the example of the inner city child for that, but I want to know how that model serves the state as a whole, because the way I see it is, and I'm waiting y'all to tell me how I'm wrong, is public education is a model that we embraced as a state a long ago, and I don't see how we can support both models, I guess, successfully. And I'm wondering...
Well, okay.
Well, hold on. I'm wondering what you think the Republican Party can do to capture my vote.
Well, actually, I think we have addressed that just right. Texas actually has probably the most freedom when it comes to education of any major state. In Texas, we respect parental rights, and we respect parental choice for how they want to educate their children. We do not have, in some states, literally, even if you want to educate your children at home, you have to get government permission. You have to jump through all sorts of hoops.
Wait, to homeschool?
Yes. Texas does not require that.
Right.
So Texas is actually more free when it comes to educational freedom, educational opportunity. And our platform balances that very carefully with advancing educational freedom and protecting educational freedom and educational opportunity. Make sure we do not put any of that at risk, while also encouraging competition. We know as conservatives, competition always produces a better result. In fact, the Texas Constitution requires that the legislature pay for a free and efficient method of public education.
Right. That's
public education has been free for the recipients. It has been very expensive for the state. It has not been efficient.
Right.
And it has not necessarily always been effective either. There's all sorts of data. There is no relation between how much you spend on education and what you get out of it.
Oh, I agree.
There is no indication that that's the case.
Well, I'm a living model of that because being brought up in the old Fourth Ward of Atlanta, that's the same neighborhood that produced Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., there were two elementary schools, public schools there, John Hope and C.W. Hill. My parents made the choice they wanted to send me to a small black Catholic school. That helped me get, you know, where I am today with a solid foundation. And so when you talk about, you know, educational freedom, I think it's important we look at educational opportunity zones, just the same as you have economic opportunity zones. Now, this thing is not a big cookie cutter approach because you have some school district, McKinney, Prosper, whatever, probably doing very well. But where do we see the failings of these school districts in the public school sector? And I think that that's what President Trump was trying to bring out with awarding that young girl that opportunity scholarship. When I look at what is happening, I go back to the example, the Austin Independent School District voted 5-0 to institute a sex education curriculum to 3rd through 8th graders that's pornographic in nature. That's not what we want to see happening in our public school systems. We want to make sure that our kids are being trained and prepared and able to go out there and compete in a 21st century economy, which is exactly the technological boom that you see happening here in Texas. We don't want indoctrination.
That's why, since shortly after I was elected chairman of the party, for the first time ever, we changed our rules so the Republican Party of Texas got involved in city council and school board races. Because, frankly, there is not a more important position in Texas than school board. And I've seen it up front and up close and personal. I mean, in Travis County and in Denton County, there are multiple school boards and people were not paying enough attention to those. And so in deep red Denton County, there was a very, very, very liberal Democrat president of the biggest school board. And yet in Austin and Travis County, we were able to get really great people put onto school boards because it wasn't a party line vote. It was a chance for us to make gains there. The problem is, as conservatives, we just naturally are not as likely to veer towards government control. I mean, when I volunteered to serve on a town council board in Flower Mound in Denton County, I was the only conservative on the Environmental Conservation Board. And I was glad I was, because before I'd gotten there, they were starting to debate about how they could take over, you know, tree sizes on people's private property, ignoring the fact that it was people's private property. And so, you know, we as conservatives have to pay more attention to levels of government that we otherwise would not have liked to. And so what I've done at the party, we got our rules changed so that we could participate, and we got involved. We got involved in city council and school board races all over the state because it is so important that we not leave stuff like the, you know, Travis ISD to going nuts.
I read the Travis ID.
Austin ISD.
Yeah,
Austin
I read AISD's content. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I agree. We don't. There's no, but I guess my point to you guys would be, being a purple voter, is you're talking about me. A couple of years ago, I had an issue with my daughter and it was bad in Frisco, which is an amazing ISD. One of the best. Love FISD. But it just got to a point where it wasn't working. And so we had actually looked at private and it was going to be $17,000 a year. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm one of those people that I get my choice would be in the conversation right now. But then I started really analyzing the weeds of our state of education in the state, and I got mad, and we got her transferred to another school, and it has been perfect ever since. But I'm still angry about that, because to me, when I went back and really got into the weeds of the little areas that failed my daughter in the public school, I'm sorry, I don't think it was necessarily a specific campus issue necessarily. I think it's a lack of leadership from top to very bottom.
Well, you know, that's you wouldn't be voting for them
and
anyway.
That's what the board is for. The board is for hiring the superintendent and setting that. And the superintendent is responsible for hiring
those principals.
We're going to
have a new show called Sherry's Gripe Moment here.
I'm not just trying to gripe. I'm just saying.
But when you're a purple voter, you know, no offense to the guests here, they get voted in by the delegates of the.
I get that. But we are talking about the purple wave and trying to get rallied Republican voters.
Right. I was trying to get us voted
in. No, but I think that you bring up a great
point. These are the guys that will go out and rally to get the people that are going to run.
But I think you bring up a great point, because everyone should want the best for their child. And if we don't see that the best for their child is available, then what are the choices? What are the options that we need to make sure that parents have? And there shouldn't be impediments and obstacles and things of that nature.
I agree. Oh. I just don't think that would be such a topic if we weren't 42.
Okay. And at that point, we're going to take a little hard break here. We're still live, so watch what you guys say. But we are going to take a break right here. We're at almost 30-some-odd minutes. And we just want to mention our sponsors. Our premier sponsor that helps pay for the show, by the way, is called Elevated Roofing. They're up here in North Texas. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Elevated Roofing. They're strong Republican backers, just so you know. very strong. They're very active in many campaigns up here. So if you don't know them, you should really get to know them, because it could be good people for you to know. Anyway, I won't go too far into that. But Elevated Roofing, they're the complete service group. And talk about conservative principles. I mean, these guys, that when you have a hail damage like you do in Texas, they aren't the ones that come knocking on your door. They're not like the car salesman or the roofing industry. They're the ones who actually do by referral. So they're not the least expensive guy, they're not the most expensive guy, but they do the best job. And I personally had them on my house, and tremendous people as far as service, taking care of your roof.
Efficient.
They did the gutters, the painting. I mean, they take care of the whole situation, work with the insurance carrier. So we'd like to thank Elevated Roofing. And if anybody has a roofing need, please contact them at 469-200-0582. And Sherry's going to tell us about Bell & Sparrows.
Real quick. Bell & Sparrow. I'll try and do it quick. Bell & Sparrow is a nonprofit, faith-based, founded by women for women. Basically, what they do is they go out and reach and grab women that are recovering from incarceration, addiction, a lot of other things, abusive relationships. They prop them up. They teach them. They support them. Put them in a state so they can go back out and be successful in society. They have their annual golf tournament coming up on April 28th, 2020. It is at 12 p.m. at Canyon Creek Golf Course, and they have several levels of sponsorship that you can buy, from tables down to a single, which is 150.
Yeah, and Bell & Sparrow is pretty unique that they empower these women, and their sponsorship's actually paid by an anonymous sponsor for them, so they don't take any of their proceeds and pay for the sponsorship. So please go out, and I encourage you to support this worthy charity, bellandsparrows.org. And lastly, Brace Humanity is a local company entrepreneur who's building up his brand. It's men's and women's bracelets. It's made from stingray and Napa leather and
yachting cord
from the oldest yacht company in England, and he makes these very nice men's bracelets. Please check it out at bracehumanity.com. I think that's quick. We'll have to give them extra time at the next show. We welcome back Lieutenant Colonel Alan West and Chairman James Dickey to discuss their run for the chairmanship of the Republican Party of Texas. My first question out of the gate, second half here, is Lieutenant Colonel, what would you introduce or change as far as the Republican platform for the state of Texas? Do you like everything the way it is? Would you like to see changes? Certain, they call them planks. How would you?
Planks. We learned planks in the log cabin show. Yeah.
Well, it's not my business to change anything. That's driven from the grassroots on up. That's where you start now with the precinct conventions, the Senate district or county conventions. The most important thing for me is to understand it and be able to go out and articulate and fight for it. I want to make sure that we can, you know, the priorities have to align with those platform planks. And let's make sure that we reduce any kind of redundancies or duplicities that are there, so that we can have a solid, you know, strategy and a game plan going forward. So, no, I'm not about changing anything. I just have to go out there. And one of the important roles of the chairman is to be that voice of those people that put that plank and those resolutions together.
And Chairman?
Actually, we've already got a team working on getting ready for the state convention and making sure that they're prepared to take all that input that's coming up from our Senate district and county conventions, which are coming up soon. And there's a whole process now that we've been refining on making sure they consolidate those. Good news is we had 49 of our planks that were in there that were addressed in the last legislative session. So that's a lot that they can remove and see what they want to add. So it is absolutely up to the delegates to make sure that they decide what we ought to be fighting for. And that has been for 3 years now. My commitment has been that I will fight for what's in there. And we've done so, and we've made some advancements, as evidenced by the 49 that we're able to remove now.
And do you think there's any way of infusing more excitement into, say, the precinct chairs, which is the real grass level where everything starts? I happen to be in a group with a lot of precinct chairs, and I know that we're trying to motivate the party at our level, but we don't really see anything from the statewide to help us. Is there anything that could be, you know, given to provide this, you know, like boost to help really get the word out?
Sure. First of all, we believe in federalism, right? So we certainly respect the fact that there are county chairs and there are county parties, and ideally everything works where you've got a precinct chairs working with the county chair, and then the county chair works with the state. But we have dramatically increased the amount of support we have at all levels over the last couple of years. And in fact, we now have, at this moment, we have 4 full-time staff at the state Republican Party, one of whose job is to travel around to different counties to do more precinct training and activation. And so, in fact, we're testing right now a really cool deal. One of the challenges we have some empty areas where, for whatever reason, there hasn't been a precinct chair. And now, obviously, we're going through the primary and we're going through the runoffs. And so we'll know soon which spots are empty for this new term. But we have found a pretty successful data model that we've tested out in Houston and in Austin that helps us pretty quickly not just get someone who's willing to serve as a precinct chair, but someone who is willing to really be an activist as precinct chair, who is willing to block walk, who is willing to host coffees, who is willing to do the work that a precinct chair is supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. to help activate and excite and turn out their neighborhood. That is the job of the precinct chair. As a former precinct chair, I can tell you, when I block walked hundreds of homes in my precinct, there were far too many of my neighbors who said, I've never heard from a precinct chair before. I didn't even know I had one. What is that?
Right.
And that's, you know, frankly, we should get to the point where no one hears that anymore because everybody's heard from their precinct chair. And so we're doing some efforts to help precinct chairs do mailings to their neighborhood, to increase the training that we have available and the support that we have available for precinct chairs. And we've been rolling that out in the areas of the biggest need. We started in the most urban areas, and it's working. So
and far. Lieutenant Colonel, how would you encourage more grassroots through precinct chairs or other means?
Well, I think you got to get out there with them, but I think also one of the things we could start is like a little Prager University. And that way you have the little videos that go out and they talk about, you know, the county chairs, the precinct chairs, the roles and responsibilities, so that you can always have, you know, lots of times people just with their busy schedules can't, you know, go and be wherever, but they can always go and they can download and say, okay, now I understand, you know, here from, you know, from the nose down to the toe, this is my duties and responsibilities as a precinct chair. And then also, I think it's critical that at least once a month, maybe twice a month, Texas is a big state, but you got to get out there and you can have an area or a region and you invite some of these precinct chairs to come out and look at you eyeball to eyeball and you talk to them about some of their concerns and also how you can help them in their areas. And I don't want to see any precinct chair position be gapped anywhere in the state of Texas.
And by all means, go to Texas GOP's YouTube channel, and you can see a bunch of those training videos are available on that channel. And check out our event calendar map on our homepage at texasgop.org. You can see an entire map, a statewide map of events near you, including the trainings and events that I've been doing across state. I've done 376 of them in 121 different towns and cities. And Terry Holcomb is also full-time out doing that. In fact, he's doing some this week now.
So I just want to get into, because you are running against each other. So, Lieutenant Crow, what differentiates you from your opponent? Like, you know, if people are listening to our podcast, you know, they're going to say, well, what does Lieutenant Crow bring to the party of the state that the chairman presently doesn't do? What separates you?
I think there's an enthusiasm. There's an energy. There's a resolve. That I will bring. There's a sense of leadership that's been honed with 22, almost 25 years with 3 trips into combat. So if you understand leadership principles from a combat environment, I think they transition very well to lead an organization in a tough time, as we see right now, fighting up against the progressive socialist left. the fundraising. You know, since I got back from Afghanistan, I've raised over $50 million in congressional races and also conservative causes, and I think that's key. You know, when I was in Congress, I mean, I was invited to come out here to Texas for fundraisers. So I want to make sure that the people here in Texas are supporting their Republican Party of Texas and not just having people come here from whatever, you know, Senate or U.S. congressional races. So I want to inspire people and show them that there will be a great return on investment of what they're doing right here in the state of Texas. So I think that we can increase our fundraising even more, and we can be a model for the rest of the United States of America.
And what, how do you answer that, Chairman? From what he's saying, you know, he's saying his leadership skills, that's why he's running basically against you, his fundraising ability. You know, do you obviously you don't agree with that. How would you respond to that?
I think obviously my track record has shown that I've been able to do more of this kind of fundraising than anyone else has been able to do with this organization, this kind of fundraising. Also, frankly, I've gotten better results with my fundraising. And so that is both elements on that. In terms of leadership, I think the number of candidates and the quality of candidates who have been willing to step up, the kind of partnerships that I've been able to put together, the kind of teamwork that we've been able to enable, I think shows that the leadership capability is absolutely there. And the big mission, the core mission that I had when I ran for this was to increase the impact of the Republican Party of Texas. And we have done that in every facet. We've increased the impact of the Republican Party of Texas in the legislative session, and we've increased the impact of the Republican Party of Texas in the electoral front. And that's from soup to nuts. That's from recruiting and supporting and training candidates to actually winning races, and we're seeing it now. We have already hundreds of races that we've won this year. The Democrats just weren't even in. We have the lowest number of unchallenged incumbent Democrats we have ever had. We have the biggest cash on hand we have ever had, and we have the biggest team that we have had in years, and it's working. It's growing to be even bigger. And from President Trump and his team on down, everyone is working together well.
And how do you just respond to the chairman's comments that everything's going great? You know, I thank you for running, Lieutenant Colonel, but we got this under control.
Well, again, I would say if everything was going great, we would see more success. We would not see the other side being enthused about believing that they can do something that they should not even consider doing here in the great state of Texas. We should not have any of our cities here in the state of Texas completely controlled by the left. And that's what we see happening. We have to do a better job of getting our message into these major urban population centers. That's going to be critical going forward. If there was one thing that saved Joe Biden's campaign, it was the black vote in South Carolina. And that is what enabled Hillary Clinton to lose, was the lack of the black vote. And when you look at the fact that President Trump's approval rating is between 30-34% right now in the black community, here's a prime time for us to start turning back the tables of what we have seen for the last 50, 60 years to get the minority communities to understand they are conservative. Their principles and values are conservative. So why would they want to continue to seek out victimization when they can be victors in their communities and their families and what have you? So I think that we have to be very strong messengers of this. And I just would hope that finally the Republican Party would understand that, you know, we don't have to compromise, appease, acquiesce, and negotiate with this other side. We can stand up and we can take them to task because they have been failing so many people in the United States of America, and they're doing it also here in the state of Texas. And there's no reason why anyone should be moving here to Texas and wanting to embrace the policies that are failing in the states that they left.
Well, and that's exactly what we've been doing. That's why, you know, years ago, even as Travis County Chair, we took the battle to, you know, and for the first time had a booth at the Juneteenth parade there. That's why we started recruiting candidates on the east side of Austin. That's why we have made a point to recruit candidates and volunteers and precinct chairs and support them in all neighborhoods across Texas. And we are making the gains, and the president is the right one, and this is the right time to see us make big gains in all communities, and we are seeing that. Now, the Hispanic community in Texas, Texas Republicans have a fantastic history with that, and we are growing that even more. But there have been plenty of elections where we won a plurality of the Hispanic vote, if not a majority of the Hispanic vote. And we're going to continue to make gains on that as we now make gains on the Black community as well. I'm very, very excited about the work we're doing on that.
Do you have any programs that you would present to get into these minority communities that the party's not doing right now? Or is it, you know, because you're telling us what you want to do.
Sure. I think that one of the critical things we need to do is have regular and consistent pastor roundtables. That has been lacking. If you want to talk about the key influencers and the minority communities, it's the pastors. And I think that, you know, once a month, a quarter, however, you know, those are the type of things you have to do and get with them, because there was no reason why they should be aligning themselves with the party where you had Robert Francis O'Rourke come out and say that if you don't embrace same-sex marriage, you should lose your tax-exempt status. Or the fact that you had the mayor of Houston, Annise Parker, who was subpoenaing sermons of pastors down there because they were speaking out based upon their biblical faith and their principles and values against this bathroom bill that she wanted to push through. And many of those pastors were minority pastors. So again, I think that those are the type of things we have to do, more business roundtables. We need to engage, you know, all of these Fortune 500 corporate headquarters and leaders that are coming here to the great state of Texas and say, look, you know, what happens if Texas does not continue on this path and Texas takes another path? Where are you going to move your business to next? So I think that it's important that we get in and challenge it. And we've got to be visible. I think that's very important, that we are visible in our messaging. And that's something that you can see if you're out there on the Dallas North Tollway or no matter where. You know that the Republican Party of Texas is here, and we are, you know, going on offense with our message. And we're not going to sit back and be reactive.
Are those some of the things that you would incorporate or are doing right now?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad most of the ideas he's bringing up are things we're already doing. So, for example, we had planned a faith and freedom event on the 28th with Pastor Cruz. We've had to cancel it because of the health concerns going on around right now. So we will re-up that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Opportunities come, yeah.
What does this
when right. when the opportunity presents itself, we will re-up it. We were already scheduling out several events all over the state with Pastor Cruz and others to do pastor roundtables to absolutely spread our message that, you know, our beliefs and principles line up better with them. That's what the Jonathan Project's been doing. That's what other groups have been doing to make sure that message gets out. So that's not a new thing.
I'm curious to both of you. What do you think could be happening right now that they're not already identifying with the parties? Like you said, they were out speaking out against things that technically you would think a pastor would not. So perhaps discussing what it is that may be lacking and or is happening that's causing that, or is it just, are you just saying it's just a lack of awareness, a lack of education, a lack of leader?
No, I think it's a lack of the relationship, and I'm not talking about having big conferences. I'm saying, why can't you just sit with just 10 pastors? As a matter of fact, the CDC said if you're above 50, you have to counsel, but so okay, well, we'll just have 10. and I think that makes it even more personal.
I agree.
So I believe that that's the critical thing. And a lot of these pastors they don't understand some of these policies. And I think it's important that we sit and talk to them about that. You know, ask them about Jack Phillips. Did they ever think that a Christian baker would have to go before the Supreme Court of the United States of America because of his very first constitutional right to freedom of religion and how that would affect them? Or sit down and have a discussion about separation of church and state. Have a discussion about the Johnson Amendment. Because a lot of them don't understand the Johnson Amendment, which was started by Senator Lyndon Baines Johnson to try to silence pastors from the pulpit.
Very interesting. So at this point, I'd like to ask if one of you is going to lose, unfortunately. But so if you do lose, what will you do to continue within the state as far as being part of the active growth or excitement in the Republican Party? I'll talk to you first, Chairman, about that.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask a slightly different version of that question.
Sure.
No, So as my opponent knows, I reached out to him well over a year ago. We were at a Black History event last February with Ronna McDaniel, and I followed up shortly after that. I reached out to you because I wanted to talk to you about you getting involved with the party and either running as candidate or helping out the party, and you never did call me back. So the question that we get asked all the time is, you know, will you stay involved after, no matter what happens with the deal? My question is, why weren't you involved before?
I've always been involved, Chairman. I've been going around this state working with Republican clubs, helping them to raise money. I was on the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission. And for you to say something like that, my oath of office to this country has always shown that I will stand up and support candidates and things of this nature. The Guardian Fund.
So when the Republican Party of Texas called you and said, will you help? Why didn't you call us back?
I've always been helping, and I don't understand what you're trying to say. You never called me and said, will you help the Republican Party of Texas? I've been helping the Republican Party of Texas. I think what you were referring to is that you heard rumors about me possibly running for this chairmanship position. But if your little feelings are hurt, I'm sorry, but I've been out there working very hard in the state of Texas, and that's why people know me. There are people that have never seen you and don't know who you are, but they know who I am because I've been out there with them. Now, I think you should answer his question instead of trying to have some underhanded attack on me, which ain't working.
It's not.
Answer
it's
his
not
question.
Attack.
Answer his question.
Question.
If you lose, are you going to continue to support?
If I have worked hard for the Republican Party of Texas for well over a decade, that's not going to change no matter what.
Okay. So the chairman said he will stay very active. Is that what you're saying? No matter what position.
Okay. And I will continue to travel all across the state of Texas as I have done and been asked to do by many Republican clubs and groups and organizations. We will continue with the Guardian Fund, which will raise up the next generation of minority and military conservative candidates all across the United States of America to include some of the great candidates that we have here in the state of Texas.
Okay. Do you have any other questions, Sherry?
Oh, no.
You're good?
I have so much to say.
It's
all
an hour
going
show.
Around
yeah,
in my
no
head.
Kidding. So we actually have to wind down the show. So I'll give you each about a minute to tell our audience, you know, why you're running and why they should support you and how they could find out more information about you. So we'll start with you, Chairman.
Absolutely. So in the last 2.5 years, we have made the Republican Party of Texas more effective, more impactful than it had ever been before. There's still a long way to go, and we have the plan, and we are executing the plan to continue to do that, to reach that goal of having more and more of our legislative priorities reached, to have more and more of our elected officials victorious, and not just for now, but for the future. The reason why we put focus on city council and school board races, the reason why we put focus on legislative priorities and platform planks is because we are building for the long-term future. The changes that we're getting done are systemic changes. The reason why we've got people doing training, the reason why we've expanded the tools available for candidates, the reason why we've recruited candidates and trained candidates is because we are building for the future that Texas needs and deserves, that we can produce for another 20 years the kind of policies and the kind of results that have made Texas the beacon that it is. And the good news is people who have moved here, they have been drawn by it, and those who move here are as Republican. We just need to get them involved. And we have built the programs, including the voter registration, the training, the candidate recruiting, all of that, that at a level the party had never seen before, and that's what's going to build a bright future, and that's what I'm dedicated to, is a bright future for Texas.
And where can people find more information about you?
JamesRDickey.com, and my number is 512-623-0276.
And Lieutenant Colonel?
And Steve and Sherry, thank you so much for having me here. And you know, when I look at where we are in Texas, we should not be in this position. It's because we have shown some trends in our most recent election cycles. So I think it's important that we have a boost of energy. I think it's important that we overhaul this engine, we give it a little octane boost, and we get out there and we go humming down the road like we know we can. this is about leadership. This is about vision. This is about going out and being a fighter on a battlefield. And I will tell you, having been on battlefields across this world, this is a more important battlefield. It's an ideological battlefield that if we lose here in the state of Texas, like you said, it's a bulwark. Texas is going to pick up three more congressional districts. We want to make sure those congressional districts and the drawing of them are controlled by a strong Texas State House and Texas State Senate. So the reason why I'm running is to fight for this great state of Texas, to fight for liberty, freedom, and fight for the future of my daughters and your daughters and sons and grandchildren. So go to westfortexas.com and let's join in this fight together to hold Texas and hold the nation.
Okay, Sherry, any closing remarks before we close this great show now?
Sanitize.
Sanitize, people. Definitely.
I want America to turn in some awesome numbers, like just get it going and turn in better numbers, like low numbers, like, you know.
You mean on the coronavirus, yes. Not on the voting, right?
Yeah. Well, no, so, yes, voting too.
Yeah. No, high numbers. No, not low numbers.
Sorry.
So thank you again, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West and Chairman James Dickey for joining us today on Common Ground. I think it was pretty enlightening for our audience. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Everybody take care. God bless.
My pleasure. Yep.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah. You bet.
I know I was hard on y'all, but I want